Welcome to episode 33 of the Flogger Presents. I'm your host, Andrew Walmsley, and today we are doing another analogue session, this time about dry plate technology. Now in this episode with Jason Lane, we talk a little bit about Mr. Kodak, the dry plate technology versus wet plates, astrophotography, the growth and rise of the film market. We discuss some tips and tricks and how we cope with working with dry plates. Jason talks to us about an upcoming Kickstarter, running his business whilst working and dealing with the stresses and lack of sleep of that. And of course he's put through our random questions, where you'll understand why we talk about hitmen, flip-flops and who we'd rather punch. So stay tuned and let's roll the credits. Welcome everybody to the latest episode of Flogger Presents. I have with me another special guest today. He is Jason Lane. Hello, Jason.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Thanks a lot for joining us. I know the distance isn't too bad. We're only 5 hours apart, which is pretty good.
It's still light here. I'm assuming it's dark there.
Yeah, it's 8 p.m. here, so it's probably dark about 4 or 5 p.m. here anyway. So.
Yeah.
But it's nice. It's a weekend. We're both enjoying a little bit of drink to get us through this.
So, well, it's my pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to talk to you about this stuff. I really love it, and I love sharing, talking shop, as we say here in the States.
Yeah,
and excited to get going. So,
no, that's cool. So, I'll tell you, why don't you just introduce what you actually do, then, Jason, for our lovely listeners.
Sure. So my name is Jason Lane. I'm the owner and founder of Pictorio Graphica, which I started when as a company who makes and sells photographic dry plate negatives. And I make them in all different sizes for large format. I've made them as small as 35 millimeter camera size plates, and as large as 16 inch by 20 inch plates.
Jesus, that's big.
Yes. And so dry plates, if you don't know, is the photographic process that was popular before the development, pun intended, of film, where the photographic emulsion was coated onto glass. When George Eastman founded Kodak, he actually got his start in dry plates. And made dry plates for a while, but he was the guy who started coating film and invented film, right? And so when film became popular, dry plates pretty much went obsolete because film is much more convenient. It doesn't break when you handle it. There's a lot of advantages that it has over dry plates, and historically dry plates sort of went obsolete, so to speak, in the 1930s or so. Interestingly, dry plates were used into the 1990s by astronomical observatories, because observatories had a requirement for a very flat imaging media. For when they needed to take images for astrometry, which is calculating the distances between stars. They have to be very precise in measuring the distances between stars in an image, and film just can't be held flat enough. But even then, in that use, dry plates sort of went away when digital imaging came out. But for consumer photography, popular photography, dry plates really haven't been made for many, many decades.
Yeah.
If you wanted to shoot your own dry plates, you'd have to make your own emulsion or coat glass plates with products like liquid light. prepared emulsion, and you can do that. And well, I wouldn't say many people, but people did that. But it's very it's a very steep learning curve, and there's a lot that can go wrong.
Okay.
Myself, I got into dry plates about 3 or 4 years ago. I had always shot film. You know, I grew up, I was in college in the 90s, and if you want to take pictures, you use a film camera. When the digital revolution came out, or when all the digital cameras started coming out, for work, I had to, my boss made me characterize all these new imaging arrays that were coming out to see if we could use them for work. And the long and short of it is that I pretty much got sick of digital imaging. I didn't want to sit at work all day in front of Photoshop and then go home at night and sit in front of Photoshop. So I stayed shooting film through the digital revolution.
Wow.
And like I said, I guess that wasn't hard enough. So 3 or 4 years ago, I got into dry plates. And so I've been making my own emulsion. I got up the learning curve, was coating plates, and then at the end of 2017, I had several boxes of 4x5 plates that I didn't think I was going to get to because work was getting busy, and I didn't think I would just have the time. So I put them up for sale online. I put 3 boxes for sale online just to let other people use them. And those 3 boxes sold in like 10 minutes. And then I had people asking if I had any more, if I could make more, if I could make them in different sizes. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so that's kind of where it started. And it's just taken off. The interest has kept me asleep many a night this past year. So...
Has this all come about because of work then? I know from talking to you that you're an engineer.
Yes.
Is it in the photography industry? Or is
No. So so my background, my day job is as an engineer. I've been working for about 20 years. So for 18 of those years, I was a lens designer. And I've moved up into the world. So I'm a systems engineer now. I have a team of engineers that work for me. But so I kind of got into it from the optics perspective, the imaging perspective. Long ago when I got into photography, it was actually through astrophotography. Because the place I was working at had very, very dark, nice skies for astronomy.
Oh, wow.
And I sort of got into that, you know, from the optics perspective, and quickly moved into astrophotography. Now, this was in the era when you had to use film to shoot astrophotos, and I did all that stuff when I got married and we started having kids. I had to drop that astro part of that because anybody who has children knows that sleep becomes valuable entity,
a privilege.
Yes. So, but I stuck with the photography. So that's a link between my two passions, which is optical design, and the photography. So
that's cool. So if I just take you back to astro, then I've never done astro. Not even digital.
Right.
How hard is it to do with film then?
So. Well, you can't go inside and go to sleep and let it run itself because somebody has to be there to wind the film.
Yeah.
And at the time, so this would have been early 2000s. The automation equipment just wasn't there anyways, even if you were shooting digital.
Yeah.
So what I would have to do is I had a computerized mount for the telescope, and I had an Olympus OM-1, 35 millimeter camera, so that part of it's not too hard. You know, figure out what object you have to take a picture of, point the telescope there. The the mount, the motorized mount will track with the telescope, but not perfectly. So there's in the gearing and stuff for the mount, there's imperfections, machining imperfections. So, which means that to track a star, you have to do guidance corrections. And you can either do that manually or with a feedback loop from another imager. At the time, it was manually done, which meant that I had a a secondary telescope mounted to the main one with a reticled eyepiece, and I would point that at a star to guide on. And as the gearing, you know, just minutely sped up or slowed down, you know, I'd have to make corrections to the guiding. And so I would have to sit there during the exposure without moving and watch this little star in the reticle during the hour-long exposure or two-hour-long exposure.
Hour or two, okay.
Yeah, so for film, the exposures for astrophotography usually ranged into several hours. Now, partway through my hobby, you know, I did acquire a what's called an auto guider, which is a CCD camera that that would track the star and provide feedback to the mount. But starting out, yes, I would have to sit there, and that was amongst some of the coldest nights that I have ever lived through my entire life, because you can't walk off and stamp your feet or move around or anything. You have to sit there while the telescope is tracking. So, but it was very rewarding for an engineer, because it's very there's a lot of technical details to setting up to have a successful shot.
Yeah,
you know, before, during, and after. You know, before the actual night of the astrophotography session. You know, you have to plan for the shot. You know, what are you going to take a picture of? So there's some planning there, and then setting up, making sure all your gear is working. You know, I would drive out into I was living out in the desert at the time, the desert southwest of the United States. So I would drive out to a remote location and set up all the equipment. And yes, there were a couple nights that I forgot something and had to pack up and go back home. But, you know, make sure everything's working, and then run the exposure, and then do the development of the film, and then the post-processing and stuff. So there was a lot of technically intricate details that go into that sort of hobby that I think appeals to the engineer in me. And doing dry plates is sort of a similar thing, because doing the emulsion engineering, I guess you could say, or the photochemistry is a big part of that. And that appeals to me as well.
Well, that's fair enough. Your day job, you're in engineering.
Yes.
Is that going to be the same? Do you see that changing?
Well, I'm really interested in growing Pictoriographica, and so it's nice to dream about this becoming my day job. Right now, selling dry plates, you know, the demand's not there.
Okay.
To support me full time.
Right.
But there's a couple different ways. I mean, the sky's the limit, so to speak, because if the key part is nailing down how to make a photographic emulsion. And once I have an emulsion under my belt, I could, you know, right now I'm coating dry plates, but you know, all it really takes is effort and, the space, I guess. The size of my basement is limited, to coat things like photographic paper or film. But that's, and you know, if I'm coating paper and film, that's a bigger market. So the way I like to think of it is that I've got this niche with the large format dry plates.
Yeah.
But it's a niche of another niche market, which is the niche of another. So I have like a niche of a niche of a niche market. And, you know, if I can step up a niche, then, this, like I said, the sky's the limit. And companies like Adox over in Germany, who, started coating film again, those guys are kind of my inspiration, because
okay.
from what I understand, you know, the demand for the product is so great that they're building a new facility.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So, you know, the market for film sort of bottomed out 10 years ago, you know, after the digital revolution, and everybody was dumping their cameras and switching to the digital. But as you probably know, that market has rebounded to some extent. It will never be what it was back in the 90s. You know,
Definitely.
It won't be like it was during most of the 20th century, but, it's definitely on a growth vector. Not a big one, but, enough because, you know, I think a lot of, older photographers are sort of coming back to it, just sort of not in any serious manner, but picking back up again, and younger folks too, who grew up knowing nothing else but digital, see film as a new thing. You know, it's the old, what's old is new again, right?
Yeah, it's like a retro movement, isn't it?
Yes, a retro movement. And and for my dry plates, you know, I think I tap into that a little bit, because a good percentage of my customers are younger folks who are interested in it as well. And I think that's a good thing. So, like I said, the market for, and I have to say analog photography to include both film and dry plates, the analog photography market, like I said, will never be as big as it ever was. But it's, I like to tell people that it seems to be a little bit healthier, because it's not dominated by a Kodak Fuji duopoly.
Yes.
You have a lot of small companies like Pictoria Graphica or, you know, Steve's Chroma Camera, who are coming up to fill these niche demands. And that's just working in other industries. That's kind of a healthy place to be from a market perspective.
Definitely.
You know, and also, you know, having the big guys like Kodak, Fuji, Ilford, you know, serving as a background for that, or as a backbone for the market. So, and it's not just me who thinks that. There's folks like Mark Osterman up at the George Eastman Museum who kind of sees things the same way, where, you know, he's worked to push the wet plate photography interest and sort of bring that out, and he's been successful at doing that. And I think the what I'm doing with Pictoria Graphica sort of is doing the same thing with dry plates, and like I said, I think the market's going to grow, and I think there's interest in it. Will the interest continue to grow at a steady pace? Probably not. You know, there might be some cyclical nature to it, but we'll see. There's a lot of optimistic people out there who see good things coming down the pipe for film and alternative processes, I guess I could say.
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time, last couple of years, and going forward, like you say, people like Steve, there's his mate Hamish. We're still missing some sort of like in-between products. We need to get our scans easy.
Yeah.
So let's use our mirrorless cameras for a purpose rather than crappy scanners.
Yes.
That serve no purpose other than, you know, every time you do your film, let's make it easy for us to do film. You know, these monopaths are a great idea for people starting up.
Right.
You know, your products are going to help people do is it Victorian?
Yes. So let me talk about that a little bit as well, because that's a good point to make from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
So my dry plates, the emulsion that I'm using is based on a recipe that dates from the 1880s. And that's important from a historical perspective, because if you look at what was going on in the 1880s, there was a lot of amateur photographers who were making their own emulsions and coating their own plates. And then
Okay.
You know, in that time frame, you had the commercial makers sort of spring up and start supplying dry plates to the photographic community. And as the demand continued to grow, you know, the commercial companies like Kodak and Agfa and the others, you know, sort of ended up dominating the market, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because they had the capability to keep up with the demand. I mean, at the time, if you wanted to take a picture, you had to use a dry plate. There was really no other option other than a wet
Okay.
plate or making it yourself, right?
Yeah, so it's
So,
pre-35 mil and everything then.
right now, as time moved on, time went on, you know, into the 1890s and later. You know, if you look at it from a common sense perspective, George Eastman and those folks, as they developed new product, you know, they had to sort of respond to the demand of the market. And so the demand said, hey, I need better. You know, the market sort of said that needed better representation of the colors and the tonality, you know, because we're talking black and white. So, you know, orthochromatic plates came out. And then eventually panchromatic plates. And the market sort of pulled the black and white photography in a direction and sort of left this left behind the look of the 1880s photograph behind, I guess you could say. You know, as you looked at as developed as you know, if you looked at the research and development over the 20th century, they sort of got away from that old look. And so not only do I, so there's a couple reasons I think that people are interested in dry plate. One is that they can pull out their old dry plate cameras, which were, you know, very capable cameras and had a unique and interesting look to them. But also it brings back these, you know, 1880s ish era amateur type photographic emulsions, which have sort of a unique look all to themselves. It sort of brings that back as a you know, as as another tool, I guess you could say, in the photographer's pocket. So as a photographer, as somebody shooting film today, you know, you can buy all your different types of films and stuff. And shoot them at different speeds, and they all have their own characteristics. But what you couldn't do was shoot these late 19th century style type of photographs and get that and replicate that look. So when you looked at photographs from the late 19th century, you know, you'd see characteristics like the sky is washed out and people look solemn and their clothes always look dark, right? And that's and it just looks different from a modern photograph, and there are reasons for that, and it was all based on the limitations, I guess you could say, of the photographic media at the time, right? And so and so that was kind of forgotten. So I think part of the interest is A, it's something unique. And B, it brings back a look that's sort of been missing. Even you
Yeah,
know, with
definitely.
the resurgence of interest in wet plate photography and tintypes and stuff like that, it these dry plates look similar to those, but and they kind of have characteristics of film as well. But they also have sort of their own unique look too, which is it, and it's all subtle, right? So, but if you start shooting them a lot, you go, hey, this looks a little different and unusual. And I think photographers today are sort of looking for something that's a little bit different. I think that's part of the appeal as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because of digital, anyone can do that shot of your mum, anyone can do that shot of that nice building, anyone can do that landscape and seascape. So
Right.
for me, film became the difference between me and all my friends.
Yeah.
And I was the least experienced person out of everybody. But I just took it on and, you know, I'm growing and growing. I shoot medium format. I've bought my large format, so that's ready. I've got my dark room ready. I've developed black and white, and I did colour literally like 2 3 weeks ago. So my journey is very, very fast. But obviously, talking to the likes of you and Steve and Rachel at Little Vintage Photography, I can see their passion sort of having like an effect on me, if you like.
Yeah, well, yes, it's a disease for sure that is
I
contagious.
know. I keep looking at things, and I swapped jobs recently. And as a leave-in present, I bought myself a book. It's Chemical Pictures. So that's all tin types and amber types and things like that. It's a guy from America who settled in. He settled in France. He's about the only person who's wrote a book on it, and it's all sort of like instructional as well. And it's beautiful, and it's like I've got the book now, so at some point I have to do it.
Yeah, so there's a photographer up here in New Hampshire who has taught at the New Hampshire Institute of Art for many, many decades. His name is Gary Sampson.
Gary
And
Sampson.
he's well known in the photography community up here, which as an engineer that means I had no idea who he was, but he got a hold of me and had heard about my dry plates from a friend of his and came down and got the tour of Pictoria Graphica Worldwide Galactic corporate headquarters here down in my basement. And he bought some plates and he went off and took some pictures with them and he was really impressed. And
Oh, that's cool.
but he shoots wet plate and tintype and invite me to bring up the kids over the Christmas holiday to take their pictures on tintype. And it was so cool to
Oh.
see the process there because with tintypes, you get to you have to develop it right, you have to shoot it and develop it right away, and you get to see the tintypes sort of develop out, and it's pretty neat. But yeah, these little processes, they're so cool. I think when I first started looking at dry plate or thinking about shooting dry plate, I sort of wanted to see if I could do that old tintype-y, the 19th century processes, but I was hesitant to break into the chemicals and stuff that you have to use for doing wet plate. With kids around the house and stuff like that. But dry plate seemed like a nice compromise, and it, like I said, it shares characteristics with the wet plate era, but it's a little bit more convenient and easier to work with. So,
Why don't you tell us, so what's like the main differences and how you use it between wet and dry?
the main differences are basically the same reasons why dry plates sort of took over in the 1870s, 1880s as a primary media for photographers. So wet plate, well, wet plates are called wet because they are sensitive when the chemicals are still wet. So you have to mix the chemicals and coat the plate and expose it and develop it all before the light sensitive chemicals dry out. They're still sensitive. You can still take a picture with them, but they're much like impractically insensitive.
So you've got to
The
do it
wet
then and
plates,
then.
from what I understand, the equivalent ISO or ASA speed rating would be like in the 0.1 to 1.0
Yeah, I heard
ASA
that.
rating. And you can make a usable photograph out of that, usable exposure with flash or if it's bright out and stuff. But the drawback is that you have to, coat the plate, expose it and develop it all before the chemicals dry out. And so, in the time frame in the 1850s, 1860s when it was popular, if you were a photographer, you had to bring your dark room with you if you were going to take pictures out in the field. And in fact, some of the famous, of course, all the photographs from the American Civil War were taken on wet plate, and the U.S. government commissioned professional photographers to take photographs, around out in the front or on the battlefield, and they had all their dark rooms with them.
That sounds incredible.
Yes, and so that was a major inconvenience. And so in that time frame, all the photographers were, it was a professional pursuit. So highly trained, experienced professionals who took photographs. There weren't very many of them, right?
Yeah, definitely.
In 1871, a guy named Maddox, I think it's George Maddox or Greg Maddox, figured out a way to suspend the light sensitive silver halide grains in a gelatin, using gelatin to suspend and protect the grains and essentially keep them wet, so to speak. But suspended in the gelatin as it dried off, you then had a plate that you could then pack away and didn't have to use it for right then and there. You didn't have to mix your silver gelatin emulsion, coat the plate, and use it before it was wet. And in fact, it was just the way the process is. It's more sensitive when the light sensitive coating is dry. But he first came up with the concept and invented it in 1871. And over the course of the 1870s, incremental improvements in the process of preparing the emulsion, increased the speed of the media, above and beyond what you could accomplish with wet plate. And by the early 1880s, the photography profession saw its first sort of amateur photographers, which were made possible by the fact that you didn't have to carry your darkroom with you. So and that was sort of the first windfall, or revolution, I guess you could say, in how photography was done. Because
Game changer.
if you or somebody or a company could make the emulsion, coat the plates, pack them up, and ship them out to you, then it became relatively easy and convenient to, expose those in a camera and then develop them in your dark room at home. So you could go out with your girlfriend or wife and have a picnic, take some pictures, and not have to develop them right there and there, right then and there.
Do you know how long they would last then, out of interest?
So, just based on my experience with my plates, which, like I said, are pretty similar to what you'd have in the 1880s. I've taken pictures and thrown the plate holders back in my truck and sort of forgot about them for a couple months and said, "Oh yeah, I need to develop these," and they were still good.
Oh, that's
So,
cool.
and also on the other end, I had dry plates sitting in the cab of my truck over the course of 2 years, and then used them, and they were perfectly fine. So, if you look on the box of J Lane dry plates, the expiration date on the back is 2 years out from when I coated them. They probably are good for decades, to be honest, because in the end, it's a very slow fine grain emulsion. But I've tested them myself out 2 years, so I put that expiration date on them. So they last a really long time, far longer than what if you're using them regularly. I mean, they're good. But like I said, when they were invented and sort of fleshed out, tweaked to the point where they were really usable. I mean, that saw the first, that was the start of amateur photography, because it was much more convenient to, you didn't have to have a wagon, a horse-drawn wagon with a full-up darkroom to take with you if you want to take pictures.
All the knowledge.
Yeah, or the knowledge, right? Yep.
Yeah. So that must be like someone starting in 35 mil now, then a
Right.
day, you buy a camera and film, send it off to someone, don't you?
Yeah.
Ah,
So
okay.
it'd be the equivalent of if you want to use a computer, how popular would computers be if you had to build your own computer from scratch, soldering the chips and putting the boards together and fabricating the computer box and stuff, and
Yeah.
just so you could use it versus buying a computer and having it up and running that night.
It's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
And, go ahead.
for someone who's say got interested in this, like me, what do we need to shoot dry plates? Let's go basic.
All right. So, of course, you need the dry plates themselves.
Okay.
And you need a way to hold them in your camera. You need a plate holder,
Plate holder, yeah.
right? And it's analogous to film holders for large format photography. You can't, unfortunately, use film holder because the glass has a finite, it's much thicker than film. So you simply can't fit a glass dry plate into a film holder because you can't fit it in underneath the
Yeah, it does
the
slide
flanges.
it
Yeah.
in.
And so you need a dedicated plate holder, and then of course you need a large format camera. Now you don't need a plate camera from that era. You can use any camera that the plate holders will fit in. And so, for example, my workhorse camera is a Graflex Speed Graphic,
Oh,
which
right,
is
okay.
obviously when it was first designed, it was the
Press
Speed
camera,
Graphic is
wasn't
the press camera from the 1940s, 1950s and stuff, and it typically shoots 4x5 film,
it?
but it will fit the plate holders in there. The specific plate holders themselves, the sizes are pretty much consistent with modern, well, quote unquote, modern film holders, because film holder sizing derives from the plate holders of 100 years ago. The one thing you have to look for is that the ridge that keeps the holder from backing out of the camera. It's like a stop ridge. You just need to make sure that that's in the right place because it wasn't quite standardized in that time. But if you have that, then you can take an exposure with that. And then to develop it, you can develop it, unsensitized or orthochromatic plates in the dark room, kind of like how you develop sheet film or how you develop photographic paper. So when I started out, I was developing my plates in trays in my dark room. You could see the image form just like on paper. It's not quite as fast, but you can see it form, and then you could throw it in the stop bath and then fix it, and there you go. For 4x5s, there's a company in the U.S. called Stearman Press who makes 4x5 sheet developing tanks. He also provides, shortly after I started making these plates, he started making dry plate holders for his developing tank. The nice thing about the Stearman Press, it's the SP445, is that it holds film in flat, like you don't have to curl up the film, and so you can also develop two plates at a time in that, and that's really what I use nowadays. And I'll send you a link to that,
Yeah,
because
that'd be
that,
really useful, especially for listeners as well.
yes. So I sort of sell the developer that I recommend. I add that in my recommendations on the back of the box. It's Kodak HC110, Dilution B, which is just a standard liquid developer. And if you may ask why that? Well, that's what I've used for years and years. So it's
Sounds
convenient to me,
cool.
and I know it well. But just like for film, you can use pretty much any developer out there, and just you'll have different results for the characteristic curve and contrast and tonality and stuff like that. I know a lot of folks use Rhodinal,
Yeah, I
1 to
do.
50 for 5 minutes, and get good results. I personally, for me, I think the image turns out to be a little bit too harsh. And the edge sharpness is a little bit too much, because this is a fine grain
Fine grain,
emulsion.
okay.
Anyways, you can't really go wrong, stuff like that. I think the emulsion responds really well to solvent developers like stock D76. But I've also used Dektal. I've used Polymax T, so paper developers. If I had it laying around, I've thrown it in there. And the nice thing about these plates is that you can watch them develop under a safe light, so they're not panchromatic, right? And so if you have some developer that there's that I haven't used and can't give you a recommendation for, then you can always develop by inspection. So you can watch the image form, and then you could pull it when it looks like it's fully developed.
Okay.
So, and
That
that's,
sounds good.
yep, and that's real similar to how they used to do it in back in the 1880s. So you can get the full 1880s photography vibe going, shooting these dry plates. So,
So the dry plate is the negative in essence.
yes, yep,
Yeah. So
it's a negative process.
yeah.
I know that some people have, developed it as a positive. If you underexpose the plate, you'll get a really thin negative, and you can put it in front of a black background or something, and you can see the positive image. Sort of like that's how a tintype works. So it's sort of a similar thing. But by and large, I think most people use them as a negative, and they either scan them in, or they make prints off contact prints, or prints off the in a larger. So
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it's glass with emulsion on,
yep.
and then you just submit it to light, just like film.
Yep.
Okay.
And you don't have to worry about flexing when you scan it,
So,
so
yeah, there must be certain things that are a little bit better.
yeah.
And obviously, it's so big. I bet that scans well.
Well, yeah, so I can the way I make the plates, I can make them in any size. So by and large, these are used by large format photographers, but I have made plates as small as little 35 millimeter by 50 millimeter plates that you can put in your 35 millimeter camera. If you want to turn it into a single shot camera, you could do that with the plates. Because obviously you have to load it in the dark room, go take a picture, and then unload it in the dark room again. I get a lot of folks who ask for 6 centimeter by 7 centimeter or 6 by 9 plates. By and large, my biggest seller is 4 by 5. That's probably 80% of my sales, and that's followed up. And obviously, I mean, if you're into large format, you know that 4 by 5 is the most popular format. But I also that's followed up by 8 by 10 and 5 by 7. So those are sort of the common sizes. A lot of Europeans will buy 9 by 12s. It's just whatever's popular. So 9 by 12 is popular over in Europe. So those sell quite a bit, quite well over there. And then it's followed up by other sizes like whole plate and half plate and quarter plate, and then every once in a while I'll get a request for even larger plates. So the smallest plate I've coated is little 35 millimeter plates, And the largest I've ever coded is a 16 inch by 20 inch for a customer who wanted those. So
that's a hell of a camera shooting that big, isn't it?
Yeah. And but I mean, it's not that hard to make custom plates. It's the same process from a manufacturing standpoint. You know, I cut the glass, prep it, and then coat it with the emulsion and pack it up. So, you know, the really big sizes have their own challenges, just working fast to get it all coated before the gelatin sits up. But other than that, it's not that much more difficult than 4x5.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. I know on your website, you've got down, you ship from Canada, USA, and Germany.
Yep.
So why these big three countries then?
Well, so it just, you know, obviously I'm in the United States, so yeah, that's the easiest market for me to reach into, and that's where my first retailers were. So let me talk about the retailers a little bit, and let me back up to the start.
Yeah, sure.
So shortly after, because it's a fun story, shortly after I started selling the plates, the demand actually outstripped the number of photographic boxes that I had to pack the plates in, because, you know, take 4x5 for example. So I packed those into your typical 3-piece boxes, as you know, same as what sheet film is packed in.
Yeah.
So you have the inner box and then an outer box, and that's what makes it light type. Well, I ran out of those pretty quick and was scrambling for boxes to put them in, because I want to make sure that when I packed them up and shipped them, that they wouldn't be exposed. There was no way to be exposed, and that's the easiest way to do that. So I was scrambling for boxes, and I had never stressed out that much about boxes in my entire engineering career, you know, before having to try to find them to pack 4x5 plates in. So I called up Blue Moon Camera in Portland, Oregon.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've heard of them.
Who I've done business with. They've developed film for me and stuff. And I said, hey, I need some 3-piece, you know, 4x5 boxes. Do you have any? And they were like, yeah, we have a bunch. How many do you want? And I said, all of them. Okay, sure, but what do you want them for? And I told them what I was doing, and they got excited. They were like, you're making dry plates, that's awesome and stuff. And cool. As part of the as the conversation continued, I said, well, I'll send you a box, and you guys can play with them and see which, you know, just have fun, right?
Yeah.
And so I sent them a box, and they distributed them amongst the staff who shot large format, and they loved them. They were so excited. And the owner, Jake Silvery, he called me back and said, hey, we love your plates. They're great. We think this is awesome. Can we sell your plates? And I said, yeah, sure. Why not? So Blue Moon Camera became my first retailer. And then after that, it sort of just, you know, as time went on, I picked up other retailers, you know, Freestyle Photographic, who's a big online distributor. They picked them up, and Bostick and Sullivan and Glass Key Photo out of San Francisco. I had some Canadian photographers who were buying plates, and I hated the idea of them paying so much for shipping. So I got a hold of Argentix up there to see if they could distribute them. And he said, yeah, sure. So he orders plates monthly and distributes them to Canadian photographers, saves them a little bit of money. And then, German retailer, which is Thomas Ox, who owns Schwarzleitz Photo Labor, and I'm sure I butchered that name, but you know, I got in a conversation with him online because I knew there were people in, well, that I had a lot of people in Europe who were buying the plates as well. And I think one of my customers in Germany said, you should really get a retailer in Europe to distribute your plates for you. I was like, yeah, it'd be a great idea. Do you have anybody in mind? He said, yes. Schwarzweig's Florida Labor, who I guess he does business with. And so he put me in touch with him. Mm-hmm. And they just received their second big shipment of plates to distribute to the customers. And so that's taken off. And so it's sort of been spontaneous, you know, sort of a mix of luck and interestingly enough, other people putting me in contact with the people that are the shops that they buy stuff from to say, hey, you should get them to distribute. So I guess it's important to point out that the community has been extremely supportive. Mm-hmm. The reception has been awesome. It's not possible with people without people like that. And it's great. So
I think that's a really good thing about the film community, isn't it?
Yep. So he's off and running, and I know that people over in Europe are really excited because, like I said, I want to save I want to save photographers money because, to be honest, you know, mm-hmm. if you're a photographer, especially a young photographer, you don't have a lot of money, and so it doesn't it's not a rich profession, I guess you could say, and I want to keep these affordable because I think that's important because, like I said, a big chunk of my customers are younger folks. And I want to make sure that they're accessible. I could definitely sell these for a lot more, but I don't want to. Now, if it ever became my day job and I had to rely on it for income, that might change a little bit. But for now, I keep the prices as low as I can. Basically, I just cover the cost of my materials, and keep the beer fridge stocked. So as long as I can do that, I'm happy to get them out there because, like I said, my goal is to get dry plates out into the world because I think it's a cool process. And I think people would be interested in it. I want people to use it and put their old plate cameras back into use. So that's my primary goal.
Wow, that's awesome. I like that. It's a good mantra to be like.
So
there's plenty of people like him as well, which is really good.
Yeah. It's definitely a passion before it is a job. Obviously, it's not a job. It's a hobby for me. It's a hobby that pays for itself, which my wife is very happy about.
Yeah, that's really useful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you're just a photographer, all you're ever doing is outlaying as an amateur.
Right. So
it just costs and costs. You know, keeping costs down is really good because, like, people like me can try new things like this.
Yes.
I would rather do this than money shooting digital pictures at a wedding sort of thing.
Yeah, right.
This is more interesting to me.
So I guess as far as retailers go, I mean, I continue to talk to new retailers or potential retailers. One of the exciting things is that I am in this – discussions with a distributor over in Asia to serve the Asian market. So I think that's pretty exciting that, in the modern, globalization, I guess you could say, and the internet and stuff that really helps out, makes it possible as well.
So. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Everything helps you in that way.
Right.
Have you spoke to Paul at Analog Wonderland by any chance? Well, you don't have to answer that if you don't have to.
No, I haven't directly, and I want to. I do want to. I've talked to somebody, a couple of distributors in Britain, but it's never panned out, and that's fine. Everybody's busy. I know this is. And this is a small niche market, but I reach out to people as I can. But if I'd be happy to talk to them. I know Schwarzweig's Florida Labor, I know he's revamping his website to incorporate like an English version. I think
Okay.
he's got his eyes set on trying to be a bigger distributor in Europe. But I'd be happy to talk to Analog Wonderland. I've tied into them on the social media network, so I see what they're doing and they see what I'm doing, so it's good.
That's
It would just I just haven't
good.
reached out to them yet.
He's an awesome guy. I mean, what he's done in 7 months, he's just incredible. I mean, to get 200 films, he's just you just want to be possible.
It's great. And I mentioned this before, but I can't stress it enough. It's so awesome that all these smaller sort of entities are helping to support an industry that honestly people thought was dead 10 years ago, but has rebounded and I think has taken on a sort of a healthier, albeit smaller, of course, but a healthier sort of aspect than when it was dominated by the big guys and nothing else really. So I think it's cool. So folks like him and myself and Steve at Chroma Camera,
Oh, God, yeah.
that's just scratching the surface of all these
It
little
is,
companies who are out there making things to support analog photography.
yeah, definitely. The next thing we need is someone like yourself to start making cameras. Now, I know that's not possible, one man, but there needs to be that missing link, and I think it's something all us photographers have talked about, isn't it?
I'm a lens designer by profession, and I've toyed with the idea of trying to design new lenses and stuff. But to be honest, those antique and older lenses and cameras and stuff, I think one of the things that holds that back, and I'm just being totally honest here, is they were so well built back in the day that they've lasted for decades and decades, and they're still good. And that's hard to overcome when you look at the cost of a camera and optics on the secondary market versus what it would cost to make today. And just think about my dry plates. I mean, if I had to support myself with the income from making dry plates, I wouldn't be able to price them where I'm at because I wouldn't be able to cover my own costs. And so I think that in the future will be easier to overcome than it is now, just because this stuff that's out there on the secondary market is still working, obviously. And it's still priced low because we're still seeing the effects of everybody dumping their cameras 10 years ago, last decade and stuff. And so until the market is no longer saturated, then that's going to be a hard thing to overcome. Now that said, I think the large format camera or the large format photography niche didn't get affected to the extent that the 35 millimeter film photography market did, right? Because large format camera is sort of well, while it's based on film,
Yeah, there wasn't a
it's got
digital, was there?
yeah it's got advantages that still apply today when compared to digital. It still has the same advantages going for it as back in the day, if that makes sense. And so there's room in that market for folks like Steve and Camera Dactyl. I'm sure you've seen the nice colorful camera, for those guys to do well. But who knows? I mean, the analog photography industry, so to speak, is still growing at a and I think there's the future's looking pretty bright.
I agree with you. So, why don't you tell all our lovely listeners about this new Kickstarter that's going to happen, hopefully?
Yes. So one of the things that's, if you want to get into dry plates, one of the first things you're going to be looking for are plate holders. And I can't tell you how often I've been asked, where can I find dry plate holders? Mm-hmm. And my first response is to find them the same place I found them, which is go on sites like eBay and look for the old antique plate holders that you can sometimes find there. So I would tell people, go look on eBay and just use your best judgment as to condition, and just make sure you get the right size and the stop ridge, whatever is in the right place, and that'll work just fine. The problem is that, and people did that, and the problem is that they basically scoured eBay of all these plate holders and other sites and stuff like that. So even the old antique wooden plate holders, which work okay, even those are getting scarce. And my apologies to those out there in the world who are looking for those. Mm. But they're just hard to find now. And even then, if you have some, they're 120 and 130 years old. Now, my plate holders that I have, you know, I've had to repair most of them to get them to work right. And they still have light leaks and stuff, but that's okay. For the really slow plates. So that in my mind is sort of a bottleneck, so to speak, or a you know, it keeps people from fully diving in to try out dry plates. And so the fellow who runs Emulsive knew of this I guess you could say frustration of mine, because I all last year. Early part of last year, I was trying to figure out a way to design new plate holders and get them out on the market. And I would talk to engineering friends of mine who'd say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. They get all enthusiastic, but they didn't have any more time to work on them than I did. So I kind of gave up until Emulsive got me in touch with Steve and said, hey, you two should get together and make lots of goodness. And so that was early last summer. Okay. And I described to Steve what I wanted to do, which was to bring to market new, and I'll put the emphasis here on affordable, dry plate holders.
Yeah.
And so him and I have tossed around ideas and worked on the design and tweaked it and refined it over the past several months. And he just got the prototype for a two plate holder, the 3D printed prototype of the holder, and he put it together, and it works great with the plates that I sent him to check it out with, and he just put those in the mail to send to me. I'm going to get them here in the next week or so. I'll test it out, and we'll refine it and stuff, so we're going to do a Kickstarter for new, affordable, emphasis there, dry plate holders. Now, these are going to be different than the plate holders that are out there, because they're not 130 years old. They're going to be brand new, and B, they're not going to be single plate holders like the handful of manufacturers who make the single plate wet plate holders that are available, you know, like Chamonix and there's a company in Italy and guy up in the northwestern U.S. who makes them. But the emphasis is going to be on affordable. So, I really wanted to get them made out of wood like the old style ones, but Steve convinced me, after much arguing and debating, that we should make them out of plastic. And as an engineer who works in an industry where molded plastic is taken advantage of, it makes a lot of sense. It makes them affordable. Yeah. And so I'm really excited about that. And we're hoping to get that Kickstarter campaign kicked off here in the next couple of months.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, how many years has it been since anyone made them?
Dedicated dry plate holders. Linhof, I think, was making some in the 60s, but not too many. Before that, it would have been the 1920s, 1930s.
God, so again, this is a massive thing, isn't it, to bring back?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's all just sort of spontaneously started at the beginning of the last year when I happened to put those three boxes up for sale. But it's really sort of,
Man.
the nice thing about the way I'm doing it is that I don't have to rush it to grow the business really big because since I have a day job, my income's not dependent on it. So I can be logical and reasonable and grow the business as, in a way that the demand can accommodate it, I guess you could say. I do have a plan for new products and new developments and stuff that really the sky's the limit. Kind of the cool thing is that I don't really have to reinvent the wheel. I just have to make sure that I get good quality product for what it is because these plates are all hand coated. Get that stuff out there so people can enjoy them.
Are you going to sell them directly, or will this be like another Kickstarter type thing?
We'll do the Kickstarter campaign, so we know how much we need to raise for the campaign, and I don't want to go into the numbers at this time, of course, but
No, of course not.
we'll sell them through the Kickstarter campaign first. The biggest part of the proceeds will go to paying for the cost of the molding for the plastic parts. Once that's paid for, that NRE, then we'll have the molds available, and so we can make runs out into the future. Now, we're going to focus on 4x5 size plate holders for this campaign, and that was kind of a tough decision because I know that's not the only size that people shoot out there, but we had to start somewhere, and we're both, we both have hardworking guys at our day job. And so I would have loved to offer 5x7 and 8x10. So those are sort of the three major sizes that sell the most or most people are shooting. But we'll start with 4x5, and then we'll go from there. There's no reason we can't scale up the design to the other sizes, but it just takes time.
Yeah, of course. Time is always the killer, isn't it? I mean, I know when I spoke with Steve, it was, he builds all these cameras at night, and it's just incredible what you guys do along with your day job and being fathers.
Yes, I lost a hell of a lot of sleep in 2018. That said, it got to the point where I said, okay, well, I need to find some help. So I do have a couple of local high school students who are
That's nice.
enthusiastic about photography that I've hired excuse me, that I've hired part time. One of the fellows cuts and preps the glass, and the other person who is actually homeschooled has time during the day while I'm at work to come over and coat plates. So she comes over and coats plates, and then when I get home and all I have to do is box them up and stuff. So I am not kidding that the first time in 2018 that I got started getting 8 hours of sleep regularly was just this past November. Before that, I was only getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night because I have to come, I'd have to come home, get dinner ready for the kids on the nights that my wife was working long hours. Get them in bed. And so my Pictoria Graphica job didn't start until 9 p.m. or so. And it'd go till 2 in the morning, coat and plates. So
Jesus.
It's tough, but I did it because I knew people out there were interested in it. So it was all for them.
Nah, I think that's shows something about your character, Jason, to be honest.
Well, it didn't kill me, so. So here I am. I'm still making plates. So.
And I think that's really good. And I think the fact you're letting the youngsters get involved, I mean, imagine, who are they going to be in 20 years' time?
Oh, yeah. So that's a cool little topic because in November, I was actually responding. I got hit by orders from three retailers all at once, and there was no way I was going to get them out in any reasonable period of time. No. So I put up a post in the local community Facebook page saying, hey, are there any high schoolers out there or anybody else who wanted to do some part-time work coding these plates and stuff, you know, instead of finding a job flipping burgers or sacking groceries. And I got a huge response, at least half a dozen people coming back saying, wow. Oh yeah, I want to work for you. I want to work. And I only plan on hiring one person, but I hired two. So I had to do interviews and all these kids. And so these high school kids are saying, oh, I love photography. It's so fascinating. And I love shooting film. So I want to help out because it's cool and stuff. Cause I had advertised that one of the fringe benefits was that they'd have access to my stock of film and stuff, and they could, you know, have at it and use my darkroom if they wanted to and stuff. So it was pretty cool to see the response to just, you know, a couple, geez, you know, 10 hours worth of work a week, you know, helping out on this sort of niche thing that nobody really knows anything about outside of the photography community. But it was cool to see the response from high school kids. And that's just, you know, that was just another data point in my mind that says, hey, film is coming back. So I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, I hired them on and they went through their learning curves and learning how to make the product and stuff, but they're both doing good. So for me as a business owner, it's kind of a cool adventure too. I'm learning lots of new things about running a business, even at this little tiny little scale.
Yeah.
So no, it's all for fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Who knows what's going to happen with them. So we've come to the time of the show where we go into my infinite random questions.
Uh-oh, I've heard about these.
Oh, dear. I think it's always a fun part of this show where we get to see a bit of personality come out as well.
Okay.
So I'll start off something easy for you. What disinformation would you feed North Korea?
What disinformation would I feed North Korea?
You can't use Donald Trump as the president, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that wouldn't be disinformation. Donald Trump was elected for a second term.
Oh. That would be good, wouldn't it? Jesus.
Yeah. I try not to talk politics too much.
No, that's fine. Yeah, we're the same over here. Okay. Can you think of anything you would give him?
Let's see. What disinformation? Oh, gosh.
Because we hear about theirs, don't we? We hear that they won the World Cup. Certain things never happened. Because they get fed disinformation, don't they? So.
South Korea is turning communist and wants to join them. There's my answer.
Mind you, you never know, to be honest, what's going on now, do you?
No.
Yeah, anything could happen now. I mean, I don't know, 9 months ago, a year ago, we thought there'd be a war or something would happen. And Trump stepped in, didn't he? Right, I'm going to press the button, and now they're all sort of meeting and becoming friends.
What was that back in the 1980s? Now I'm going to date myself. The open mic comment that Ronald Reagan said about that's it, we've had it. That's it with the Russians or whatever. The bombs start dropping in 5 minutes or something like that. And it was an open mic comment. Just he was joking around like Reagan liked to do. But that I remember that caused some consternation around the world.
Was that the time he was recording and didn't think he was getting recorded?
Yes, yes.
I remember that. Yeah. I'm showing my age as well. We're just in our early 20s, obviously, listeners.
Oh, yes, you know.
We read about this.
Yeah, we read about that, yeah. I'm only 22.
God, I'm 23. Damn it, I'm older. Yeah, question number two. Do you think hitmen exist?
Do I think hitmen exist? Yes. Are they used?
I asked my wife this one, and she says, yeah, of course they do.
Of course they do. Are they used as much as Hollywood thinks? No, I don't think so.
I think it's the way my wife said, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I watch my step now.
And say, wait a minute, what did you do before we got married?
Yeah. You got to be careful now, haven't you?
Yeah.
I asked this one to Steve as well, so I'd be interested to hear this one. The digital world is full of updates and upgrades.
Uh-huh.
What function or part of your body would you update or upgrade?
Oh, my gosh. I would update my memory.
Would you?
I've forgotten more things than I know in the past. Mm. And every day it's like, oh, I remember, especially at work. I'll get into a meeting or something, and they'll be talking about something, and I'm like, oh, that rings a bell. But that's about as good as it gets. So
that's what happens when you get into your 20s, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, my college years in the 90s are still pretty fuzzy. So I don't think I want to remember everything that went on back then, but... Yes.
Yeah, I struggle with my memory, but my wife can remember, like when she was 4 years old and like what she was wearing.
Yeah,
and I just think that's amazing.
My wife can remember all the bad things I did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and has no problem bringing them up.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, it's like forged in a ledger somewhere. I think when we do things,
I'm like, I think you're making that up.
Yeah,
but I can't argue. So
yeah, because I don't remember. We're useless, aren't we? Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, I agree with you on that one. I remember Steve saying it was his eyesight. He's got a really bad eye.
Yeah.
Apparently. So okay. Number four. What is more funnier, a clown, someone using something oversized, say like a big phone or big shoes? Mm. A good joke or someone tripping over?
Well, I'll have to go with number three, just based on how often my kids laugh at me if I trip and fall.
I know. I think everybody does, don't they?
Yeah, it's that slapstick comedy.
Yeah, because I think clowns now... So many people hate them because they're scared of them.
Yeah.
Oversized things have just become normal now, I think.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay. I agree with you. Number five, tell me something you have stolen in your life or something you would like to steal.
This is one of the things that I can remember. I think when I was... 5 years old, okay. I stole a handful of candy out of one of the one of the local gas station stores back where I grew up,
Okay.
and was not smart enough to actually hide it when I got home. And so, I called, I got in trouble, and my
Oh.
father, this was late at night, so my father took me back. I was in my jammies, and I had to give the candy back to the store owner.
Yeah.
And I grew up out in the boonies and stuff, and so, they weren't, this wasn't the city or anything that, but I still remember the store owner saying that if I ever stole candy from him again, that he was going to call the authorities. And so that put the fear of God in me, so to speak, and I've been pretty good ever since, not taking things. So,
It's a good life lesson, I think, that.
yes. So I stole candy as a kid.
Oh, it's not bad. That's not bad. Yeah, it's not
I'm
like you did
sorry,
anything really
Mom. I'm
bad.
sorry, Dad.
Well, they raised you. It's their fault, surely.
Yeah.
Number six.
There's more.
If you could be in a rock band, what would it be called, and what is your role?
Is my role?
So you don't have to be a musician. You could be a manager, a technician, a roadie, but if you
Could I
could be in a
play
rock
the air
band,
guitar? That's about all
why
I'm good
not?
at.
Yeah,
What
you
would
play
it
the
be
air guitar.
called? Oh, you're asking an engineer to be creative.
Yeah,
It would have to be.
solving problems.
It would have to be something pun, punny, punish. It would have to be a good pun.
Okay.
I would probably call it the flip flops. And the reason for that is because I'm actually by degree, I'm an electrical engineer, but I never did any electrical engineering when I left college. It
Okay.
was all optical design stuff that I learned on the job.
Yeah.
And in college, studying EE courses and stuff, and only the electrical engineers are going to get this out. Are going to get this joke, but I turned to the girl who was sitting next to me and I said, "What kind of sandals does an electrical engineer wear?" And she's like, "What?" She said, and I repeated the question, "What kind of sandals does an electrical engineer wear?" And she said, "Well, what kind?" I said, "JK flip flops." And the only people who will understand that is the electrical engineer. It's a type of logic circuit.
Okay.
And she said, "You're an idiot." So I would have to call my band the Flip Flops.
Flip-flops, I like that. Yeah. It's connected to what you do, isn't it, Sam?
And of course, I
Something like that.
flip-flopped away from that right out of school and never did any more double E.
Okay.
So there you go. That's the bad
Yeah.
engineering joke for all your engineer fans out there.
Yeah. I know some computing ones as well. That probably means Steve would get. They're just terrible, aren't they? Right, so you get to either punch, have a pint, or give a present to the following people: Jason Statham, Jason Donovan, and Jason of the Argonauts.
I would have a pint with Jason the Argonauts.
Yeah, cool guy. Legend.
Jason Statham.
Because you don't know if he really is tough.
To be honest, I don't know who that
Oh, Jason Statham's the action hero dude. He's in a lot of action films even now.
Okay. So I wouldn't want to punch him because that would end poorly for me. So what was the other option? Punch
And
pipe.
have punch pint and give a present.
I'll give him a present.
Oh.
And who is the other guy?
Jason Donovan, the singer from the 80s and 90s.
I'll punch him. I hate
Yeah.
80s music.
You are not going to be very popular.
Sorry, fellas. It was bad the first time around. It's not any better. I'm more of a heavy metal, alternative rock, and then grunge type of person.
Fair enough. I agree. I'd probably punch him.
Yeah.
Great. My wife loves him, but he's a nice person now, but he's been through a lot of bad stuff. So thank you very much for bearing with us on the random questions.
My pleasure, Andrew.
I didn't scare you too much.
Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, God. So I'm at the part of the show where what I normally give a few minutes for people to tell us about any websites, social feeds, or anything they want to talk about. So over to you if you want to tell us any links for us to look at.
Sure. The most important thing, I guess, is that I'm on the web at www.pictoriographica.com. And I know that's entirely impossible to spell, so I'm hoping Andrew will provide the link for that.
Yeah, that'll clean the show notes, no worries, mate.
There you will find links to the retailers that sell my product and also the storefront that I have set up to sell the sizes that they don't sell. One of the new things that I did for 2019 was add a shop to the website that allows that sort of a limited release, quote unquote, plate store. So any new emulsions that I'm working on that are in the experimental stage, I'll put them up there for sale. They're limited runs. Once they're sold, they're gone. I just sold all of the 25 speed orthochromatic plates that I had posted there. There'll be more of those because one of the things that I want to do in the future is put out a faster plate, something that's will appeal to more people. I'm on Instagram at Pictoriographica, and I'm also on Facebook. I have a group called Dry Plate Photographers on Facebook that allows people who are shooting plates to share the results of their shooting plates and trade notes and all that stuff. And that's pretty active. I'm pretty active on Instagram as well. I also have I just stood up a newsletter email list that you can sign up for on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have a contact page, there on the website too, that if you're interested in plates and you see a size or you want to shoot them in a size that you don't see listed, I am happy, very happy to make custom plates for you. The prices aren't, the prices of plates scale with the size of the plates and the custom sizes are no exception. So there's no premium for custom plates. They're just as easy for me to make as the quote unquote stock plates. Feel free to reach out. And for 2019, look for the dry plate holders and also look for faster emulsions coming out. So lots of fun stuff for 2019. It's going to be a year of growth for me.
That's awesome. Do you think you can do me some custom dry plates the size of Mexico?
Yeah, but it would cost you.
Because I think all I'm thinking is, that is an alternative solution to building Trump's wall.
Just
put dry plates up.
Well, that would be a glass wall that would break pretty easy. To be honest, within practical reason, not the size of Mexico, I can coat plates of pretty much any size. I have had people ask about super huge size plates because they want to print positive prints onto them from another negative. And make positive images on glass. So you can definitely do that, which is pretty cool. So
that's good. Yeah, you can do anything. Really.
I'm pretty active on the photography forum, Fotrio, www.fotrio.org, which is been around for many, many years. They have a sub-forum dedicated to emulsion making, which you'll see me post a lot to and stuff. So if you, I definitely encourage you, if you're interested in dry plates and want to try your hand at making your own emulsions, go for it. That's awesome. That's what I want people to do, is try out dry plates.
That's cool. Yeah.
So there's my spiel.
Oh, thanks for that, Jason. So obviously we want to say good luck with your expansion, good luck with the Kickstarter. And my final question, who would you like to see come on the show next? We normally ask our guests for a recommendation, maybe someone you know, someone you might think is really interesting, and maybe someone different to anyone before. Have you got anyone in mind?
I think it'd be pretty cool to talk to the fellow who did the Camera Dactyl Kickstarter.
Forget his name. Yeah.
Edgar. See that memory thing that you asked about.
I know. Oh no. Yeah, because a few people have mentioned his products. I've obviously been keeping watch.
He seems like a pretty good guy. Thomas Ox, who runs Schwarzweitz Photo Labor. You know, I've exchanged emails with him, and he seems like a really enthusiastic guy who is a big proponent of analog photography. He'd be a good guy to talk to over in Germany too, to get his perspective. So
that's really awesome. We can always swap links later. So yeah, thank you so much, Jason.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you, or pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show.
No, not a problem. I hope everything goes well, and I can't wait to get into the dry plating myself once I figure my camera out.
Sure, absolutely, Phil. I'm happy to answer questions. I usually respond pretty quick to email for folks out there who have questions. So, there you go.
That's really cool. So thank you from the UK. Enjoy your afternoon. And I'm sure we'll keep in contact after this. So,
all right, take care. Enjoy your night over there in England.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.
Well, folks, that's the end of another show. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed making it. It's always great to have a guest on with me. Please do share the post and podcast show as much as you can where relevant. If you have time, please do not forget to review this on iTunes. Just hit the review button and give it 5 stars, please. It's always helpful. It's motivation for me to keep the show going, and I want to keep this going for as long as possible. And basically, I'd like to get lots of different and interesting people on here. So that's what I'm trying to do. Thank you again, and see you next time. Bye.